first.
Oh, I see.
Papers in front of them on the subcommittees. Call the meeting to order and we got House Joint Resolution 11. We'll ask Representative Snyder to give us his finding.
You have a brief written report in front of you.
Excuse me. Do we get copies of this or not?
Yes.
I'd like one.
In your chair.
This is my chair. No.
Oh, we should join this.
Here's the bottom drawer. Here, what would you like? HGR, what?
11?
11.
Being here.
Where am I? Okay, I'm ready, I'm sorry.
The written report is before you. Ms. Virginia Delapaz asked to speak briefly on this resolution. She is here now. That's why, you, Mr. Chairman, I'll hear her testimony.
Forward.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Virginia Delapaz, and I'm the lobbyist for the Alaska Conservation Society. The Alaska Conservation Society has repeatedly questioned the safety and planning for a marine transport leg of the Alaska pipeline transport system. As we see it recently, there have been numerous spills involving oil tankers that should be addressed. This type of a resolution, House Joint Resolution 11, requesting the U.S. Senate Committee on Commerce to hold hearings in Alaska on oil tanker safety, would help focus national attention on this particular part of the transport problem of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline Project. We have no objection to this resolution. It seems like it would be a good idea to request the committee to come up and hold hearings in Alaska. I just had two suggestions that I would make to the committee. One, that you get a summary of the United States Coast Guard meeting that was recently held in Juneau on January 13th and 14th, where the Coast Guard hosted a meeting involving something like five or six workshops that addressed data gathering, tanker simulation, and all sorts of other things along this line. In attendance at that conference were officials from the state and the federal level that have been involved in planning. They did some summaries of these, and these should be available from Admiral Hayes' office, who's the in charge of the Coast Guard here in Alaska. So it might be helpful to the committee to have these summaries. I understand that it's possible to call their office and get a summary of this. I haven't seen one yet, but this was just recently completed, so it should be available to the committee. And I just suggest that it might be helpful if you had that information. Also in attendance at that conference was Dr. Betty Willard from the President's Council on Environmental Quality. And she had a lot of really helpful comments to make, and it might be of some benefit to you to read them. Secondly, it doesn't state in the resolution what kind of time frame you're looking at, exactly when you might want to have the committee up here. I might suggest to the committee that you might want to think about coinciding the request for the U.S. Commerce Committee to come up here with the tanker simulation trials, which will be going in April. The Coast Guard meeting did suggest the possibility of people being able to be on the tanker, public officials, and along this line. And so it might be of some benefit to coincide this. Now, I don't know what their hearing schedule is, if this would be possible at all. But I would just suggest that this might be looked into, and it might be a very excellent way of informing the United States Commerce Committee on what's going on as far as the tankers, since this is going to be in April, I believe. I don't have the exact dates right now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any questions?
Would your group testify if Mr. Magnuson came up here and help us meet?
Probably.
Anyone else would like to testify?
I'm sure there would be numerous environmental groups that would be interested, but without checking with them, I couldn't tell you offhand.
The second part of this, I did try to call Senator Magnuson's office, got a hold of his secretary only. He was in a meeting. She gave me the name of Mr. Bud Walsh to contact. He was unavailable today, and I will continue trying as far as talking directly to him, inviting that committee to meet him last week.
Yeah.
Has there been any discussion of which city in Alaska? Coastal cities or Anchorage or?
No.
Is there any further questions?
Yep. I think this might be a good idea to try to coincide it with the tanker simulation if it is feasible, and then that would put the meetings in possibly valid meetings.
There are any other questions? Comment?
Would it not be best if it were worked out within the resolution of where this would be, if we're going to talk about passing it, if we talk about getting the most ground out of it? A place like Valdez is not easily accessible to people to come and testify. It's terribly hard to get in and out of. And we are talking about maybe not a state expense, but at least a federal government expense. If we're going to bring people up here from this far away, we should have some assurance before we pass it that if it comes to happen, that it's a worthwhile event.
Is there any other comments? President. Yuri?
I think the Sally's points are well taken. Where should we go?
Well, some will have to decide on this where and when. Anybody have any comments on it?
No? Mr. Chairman, could I ask Mr. Snyder to review again what the upshot of his communications was with Magnuson's office? Two reasons. One is that that's something that probably should be coordinated there, but they... On the other side of it, if depending on how long they're going to have the subject under consideration, to what extent is time of the essence? I suppose it seems to be pretty urgent.
Well, I intend to try to contact Mr. Walsh again tomorrow morning because of the 5-hour time difference. You have to catch him in the morning if you're going to catch him at all. And at that time, he will be able to give me some information about how long the hearings are going to be held and possibly whether it is possible to hold a hearing in Alaska. But I think once they receive this resolution, we will get an answer to that also.
Mr. Chairman, yeah. Are there any further questions of me? There might be somebody else that wishes to say something.
Well, we could call on you if you're not going to meet. There is.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any other questions or comments? You read?
This line 25, 26 bothers me a little bit. And therefore, Mr. Chairman, I propose an amendment that after whereas comma on line 25, delete all language through and on page, on line 26.
A radar aboard a ship is going to pick up a marker because it costs a few extra bucks to highlight that marker. Let's spend those few extra bucks. Very generally, it's our belief, at least some of us, that the only way that the regulations come down or are enacted that the Coast Guard finally implements are through this national medium of the United States Department of Commerce, and that's obviously our thrust. Now, that these statements have been rather broad, but I probably could reply to specifics if members wanted to ask questions.
Is there any question?
Mr. Speckle, do you know, have they decided whether they're going to cause demolition on that rock ledge there in the Narrows? Have they decided that yet?
The decision has been made not to detonate or try to remove the rock. And the rock is more than just a rock. It's a large mass of, it's an underground reef. Some 300 yards by 400 yards, and the cost of moving that down to a depth that would give you any overall safety is enormous. I think now we're talking about in excess of $16 million. And the Coast Guard, the navigators, the ship captains that have used the narrows there feel that they can manage that situation without the removal of Middle Rock. Now, when I talked about a reflector on a up top of Middle Rock, there's a large cylindrical concrete marker that has been poured there as a in place of a buoy. On top of that, there's a radar reflector. And part of our discussion was there apparently have been some cases where ships coming in where the ship might pitch in a storm or something, don't pick up that reflector. And part of our discussion was whether or not the safety could be increased by adding some sort of a mechanical monster to that reflector. Now, I'm not a, you know, I know so little about the technology of radars and bouncing radio waves back and forth and that sort of thing that I'm a very poor technician to be talking about that. But our recommendations were mine and I think Chuck Champion's that, you know, that the reflective capability of that concrete pylon on Middle Rock be increased. And I think that, you know, there's a good chance that that recommendation will be followed through with.
A radar reflector, it's made out of all different kinds of stuff. Some is nylon, and some is made out of stainless steel. You can have a little reflector made out of stainless steel. They're made all just like if you put two pieces of paper together. So you'll always get a shot at one side of it, regardless which way it turns. And a ship going up and down, it'll show a spot on your screen, showing you how many yards or feet or whatever you range you got it set on. But if your ship go up, it'll pick it up going up, it'll brighten up the reflector, and when she goes down again, it'll brighten it up, even though the radar isn't aimed on it at all times, but it'll show the distance all the time, and this spot will keep moving, or your boat will get closer to it. So, with a good reflector on a pillar like you were talking about, they wouldn't have any trouble picking it up, even if it's a heavy sea, and a big tanker don't move that much coming in into a place like that.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make one comment. I feel somewhat as though the delay in really aggressively following these safety features and tanker problems inside of Prince William Sound has not been in the best interest of the whole operation. I think that we should have been undergoing these things a year ago. However, we're at this point, we're at the point where we have got to act rather quickly in view of the fact that we expect to be lifting oil out of the Valdez terminal in July. Of course, you know that we do have VLCC coming in April. It's going to run some trials. Concomitantly with this, we have been having computer model trials on this whole safety system. But I feel that I really can't understand the reason for this delay. These problems should have been approached a year ago.
Any other questions?
If this were held, what would it be our Department of Commerce that would be responsible for setting this meeting up? Forgive my ignorance, I'm new at all of this, and I'm confused as to how we can totally consider something that really has this much weight if it goes through. It seems like it's just rhetoric.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not an expert. The resolution invites the U.S. Committee on Commerce to hold a hearing of the Congress, and seems to me that there's more chance of their doing that if they're invited than if they're not. I mean, that's just what it boils down to. They're certainly under no obligation to carry out the intent of the resolution. It's simply an invitation. But I think an invitation that would be taken seriously.
I believe my question is, would it not be taken more seriously if it were laid out where the degrees of responsibility would be, and back to my original question of where it would be held?
Where the meeting would be held?
Right.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's kind of up to them.
Okay.
The time when they could meet, I'm sure they will get together with Alaska senators. They will say possibly the Anchorage will be the best place. They will notify us that they are coming, and notices of the public hearing will be held. I don't think it's our place to say particularly that they should be invited to one area or another. I agree that it probably should be in the central area of the state so that everybody can attempt to get there. But I think the arrangements are up to them.
So far as this joint resolution, it's not a bill. It's just a resolution, the way I read it, inviting them to come up and hold a hearing. And whichever way they look upon it, they'll either say they'll come or they won't come. Mr. Lone, do you figure it the same way?
Right. We're just extending them the offer of our hospitality to discuss the subject of port to the state of Alaska. I think that best we can do.
Thank you. That helps.
Yeah, if I may say one more thing. If there's no big, I don't see any big problem with it. I should think the sooner we could get this resolution out, the quicker they would act on it and let us know if they're going to come or not. So what is if there's no more questions, what's the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chairman, I'll renew my motion to amend it. Line 25, delete, of all ocean industries, oil tankers have been demonstrated to be the single greatest source of oil pollution in the ocean, comma, and.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Malone.
I'll renew my objection on the same grounds. I'd like to know if there are any more people here to testify on the legislation.
Is there anyone else to wish to testify?
I'm Sharon Loboff from the Alaska Conservation Society. I'm not going to repeat what Mrs. Del Piazza had to say. I just want to provide the new members of the committee with a copy of the Audubon magazine, which has a very good tanker safety article in it from last year. That's basically all I wanted to do. I know there's a lot of you that are new, and I'm going to leave them here and ask that you pick them up. But we also support the resolution.
Jorgen?
Sharon, would your group testify if the magazine is committee came up?
Yes, we've been following those hearings.
Would you please state your name?
Yes, I did. Sharon Lobaugh, Alaska Conservation Society. For the record. Yes, we would testify wherever the hearing would be held, I'm sure. We've been studying this issue for quite some time, Rick, and we have been into it. And we do support your efforts. Mm-hmm. We've also attended the Coast Guard hearings that he talked about.
Chairman?
Mr. Malone?
Is that it as far as people to testify on the resolution?
I don't see any more. So what's the wishes of the committee on Malone?
Mr. Chairman, if there are no further testimony, I'll remove my objection to Mr. Urian's motion.
Mr. Chairman?
Miller.
I'd like to object if the speaker's going to remove his. Frankly, to me, that's what the thing's all about. Oil tankers have demonstrated to be the single greatest source of oil pollution in the ocean. You know, that's what we're here for. That's why they're coming up. That's the whole nuts and bolts of the thing. So to me, the thing just becomes a polite piece of rhetoric without that phrase in there.
Well, I don't right. When you read this language, I mean, if oil tankers are the greatest oil pollutants, now what else is going to be for oil pollutants, not oil tankers? I mean, not a liquefied gas tanker, is it?
Well, there's considerable oil pollution from municipalities, but it's not as great probably as oil tankers. Well, there's several sources of oil pollution.
If you continue this, whereas it said, we would say several studies demonstrate a high probability for chronic acute oil pollution regarding both transportation and North Slope oil. It continues, and it already says it once in that whereas, and I just don't think you want to say it twice. It's not clear of the language.
Right. Say it three times.
Mr. Snyder.
Not being a language purist, I'm in favor of leaving it in. It doesn't make that much of a difference, and it is possibly a little stronger than deleting it. I agree with Mr. Miller that that's the purpose of the entire resolution.
Let's take a vote on the amendment. All in favor of keeping the language in the bill, signify by raising your right hand. Opposed? Now, if we get this right, the first was to keep the language in.
That's the way you posed it, though.
Right.
So it comes out.
So, what do we want to do? Make it a committee substitute? Or just amend it?
Committee substitute.
What's the wishes of the committee? Committee substitute?
Mr. Chairman? What was the outcome of that vote?
It was a tie vote.
Was it a tie?
Does that mean the motion fails?
4-3, tie.
You want to go over that vote again? Or?
No, I just want to know what the chair's ruling is on the motion, that was all. Is the motion alive or dead? Did it pass or was it killed?
Did you get on that?
There were three yeas and there were three nays for the language to be stricken from the bill from line 25. So there's a tie vote to strike the language.
There was four.
Small point, but just for the record, I'll suggest we rescind our action, but I will ask the chair at this time to state the question in the affirmative, namely that for the passage of the amendment. In other words, well, the question would be, will Mr. Urien's amendment be prevailed?
Well,
that is to strike the language.
Yeah.
Shall we strike that language in the resolution?
Okay, shall we strike the language of Mr. Urien's amendment? And that's to strike this up.
That's to pass his amendment, yeah, which strikes language.
Yeah. Opposed? I suppose the order break the tie.
4-4.
How do you vote? It's going to remain. You can see. Ninth members.
The motion failed.
Now, what's the pleasure of the committee members to pass this out? Or
I'll move we pass the bill out. With due pass.
Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. So we have a full committee.
I'm sorry, she left me right now. Oh.
Hello, Mr. Snyder.
Mr. Chairman. Monday the 31st, beginning at 2 o'clock in this room, we will begin holding informational hearings on House Bill number 82, an act relating to the sale of state royalty oil and to the oil and gas properties production tax. That will be announced on the floor.
May I have the bulletin board? sure what the procedure's going to be with these subcommittees, but it appears to me, you know, the demands for lobbyists, demands for them to file all sorts of reports and forms on expenses. If we're going to have the hearings on bills, that's going to require people to come from out of town, which they have to report and all this sort of thing. It seems to me that we would be courteous enough to these people that we would have full hearings with all the committee members instead of having a subcommittee meeting and then a week or two later having a full committee meeting. I think we're putting the demands on these people that just not necessary. Speed up the process, the legislative process.
Mr. Erie, the idea of the subcommittee was for the chairman and the subcommittee to try to gather information, the way I understand it, and to bring before the committee. And when we come to the hearings, we will sit down as a full committee. And I think the subcommittees can gather up a lot of information and find out who want to testify, talk to different people, and then we will set up our meeting with the full committee to act on the bill. Mr. Malone?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's my understanding, too, that basically what the subcommittees was going to do is prepare for the full-scale hearing before the full committee, and that we weren't going to ask people that had to travel in and out of town to do it twice or anything like that, but they would accept the responsibility of making sure, trying to anticipate the questions that would come up at a full hearing by the committee, and in that way make sure or help to ensure that the hearing before the full committee did answer the questions that the committee members had and allow them to make a decision at that time instead of going through a string of four or five hearings to do the same thing.
Is there any other questions?
Then we won't call these hearings.
It's a meeting, if you want to call it a meeting.
If there's no more to come before this committee.
One other thing, if I may, Mr. Chairman. Why don't we meet at 1:30?
Mr. Malone?
Mr. Chairman, I would amend that to 1:15.
Or 1:15.
Is that agreeable with everyone? Hearing no opposed, so ordered. 1:15. Is there any more to come before this committee?
I just basically a question on the subcommittees again. When the new bills are referred to the committee, do I have it straight in my mind that not all of those bills will be referred to the subcommittees? In other words, should I and my secretary be watching for all the bills that relate to parks, lands, and forests and you know, just pull them out, or will we be given notification through the committee as to which ones we're specifically wanted to look into?
Well, any bills, you should get a copy of them, look them over, and find out if there's any.
No problem there, but I'm just asking which ones the subcommittee should go into in depth.
We'll refer them to the committee, like you had on your desk here earlier.
Okay, great. Yeah. That answers my question. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I thought you had already established that procedure in an earlier meeting. They were going to do that.
I thought so too, but I got a surprise on the desk today that I did not know about. So.
Is there any more to come before this committee? Hearing none, we'll adjourn.
Diane, what do you want us to do with the folders for HJR 11 now that we've passed?
Bring your ass up first. Which number was it?
Number one, we did, on his part.
No.
No, we've got our other information.
Okay, fine.
Next to me.
Oh, Senator's down. And we'll take up Senate Joint Resolution number 7, and Senator Seeger, testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for considering the bill so promptly to you and your committee members. Senate Joint Resolution number 7 is nothing more or less than a protest against Representative Udall's House Bill number 39, which would take a great many millions of acres of Alaska land and classify them as purely wilderness. You might say that he is doing unprovoked good for the entire state, but I want to talk especially about what it would do to us in southeastern Alaska, and I'm glad that you're here today, Representative Udall. If you've seen the plats and the maps, the Forest Service had proposed putting aside certain areas of southeastern Alaska as wilderness areas. And Senator Gravel, together with the U.S. Forest Service, the pulp industries of southeastern Alaska, the conservationists, all their people, the fisheries people, had been trying to sit down and arrive at a consensus as to what could be done and how various areas were to be classified. And progress was being made. And I certainly don't find fault the conservationists for their goals. I disagree with them to the extent that they would go, but in this particular case, they subverted that organized effort by all interested citizens and tried an end run, in my opinion, or an end play, by which they went directly to Congressman Udall and had him introduce the bill, which is 100% thought out by the conservationist people, taking 4.5 million acres more out of southeastern Alaska and making it single-purpose land, wilderness only. And I take the view that the land is here for utilization as well as for recreation, and that the Udall proposal is simply bad news for this part of the world and for the state in general. It just goes too far. I might give you an illustration as to the impact of how these things are done. If you remember reading in the Anchorage Times last Wednesday, which we received on Thursday, there was an article about how Senators Gravel and Stevens, at the last possible moment, had dissuaded the departing officials of the Ford administration from taking Admiralty Island down here, which is a huge island down this way, and making a national monument out of it. And so the Ford officials withdrew that proposal as they stepped out the White House door, but yet the Udall bill would come right back in the back door and do the same thing which our legislative delegation just managed to stop. It's that bad, and I would appreciate any consideration that your committee would give to the swift enactment of SJR number 7. I think it's a very appropriate resolution at this time.
Any questions from the committee? Senator Seeger?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your courtesy.
I have
one question, Mr. Chairman. Bob, I haven't had a chance to read, to compare both these resolutions, the one in the House and the one in the Senate. For all practical purposes, are they the same?
The point they seek to make is the same, yes, sir.
Is there any other questions? Thank you, Senator Seeger. Is there anyone? Is there anybody else wish to testify on Senate Joint Resolution number 7? Now, what's the action by the committee on Senate Joint Resolution number 7?
I move we pass it out.
With a due pass, or what's the pleasure?
Due pass. Second and consent.
So ordered.
Thank you.
is under. Our next bill will be House Bill 18, Representative Swanson. You wish to testify on House Bill 18.
Chairman,
Swanson.
Members of the committee, this is direct approach at a problem that has not been able to, that has caused us innumerable problems, not only in the state of Alaska, but in Washington, D.C., and all over the United States. It's a problem that's indirectly caused by the mismanagement of the Department of Fish and Game, not being able to cope with the problem, the control of wolves. Now, I think that if anyone in the last, especially the last 2 years, we go back through the newspaper articles and of all the problems that we've had, and all the problems have been caused by the attitude and the type of programs initiated by the Department of Fish approach, like this one, is probably the piece of legislation we should enact at this point in our time. But it even goes farther than that. It goes to the control of the wolf. And maybe a little bit, maybe I could go back, Mr. Chairman, the member of the committee, and arrive at my interpretation of how we arrived at the problem we have today and the ungodly amount of money we're spending under the direction of the Department of Fish and Game. Several years ago, and you deal in these kind of matters, and throughout a district that I represent, which is some 85 million acres in the interior of Alaska, that the animals and their protection is really pertinent to 85% of my constituency. The wolf pack and the and their growth over the last 5 years has been just astronomical. They came on with the rabbit cycle, along with the fox and the lynx, and at their peak in time, at the peak of the rabbit cycle, we had a peak of wolves. Probably more in the state than any time in our history. The rabbit cycle dropped off. The Fish and Game Department, through a series of events, of allowable events in the taking of cow moose in the state of Alaska in the last 7 years, over 18,000 cow moose, thus almost eliminating our moose herds. At the same time, at the Fish and Game Department, directly responsible for this almost wiping out our herds, along came an excess amount of wolves. Because the wolf is only the one animal that rises with the rabbit cycle, is the only animal that, when the rabbit cycle drops off, is the only animal, again, is the one that can harass our caribou herds, our big game animals. Consequently, those two factors have led us into terrific controversy with people all over the United States on the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's method of wolf hunts. Rather than go to a fantastic program that cost someone in the last couple of years, somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe $200,000 or $300,000, costing $5,000 to take a wolf, destroying one helicopter and damn near destroying another one. A simple piece of legislation like this could have alleviated absolutely all the problems we've had in wolf control. I have entered, this piece of legislation doesn't do anything more than allows a person with a bona fide permit or a hunting license to take a wolf. He can take a wolf anywhere in any game management unit in the state of Alaska. It's rather simple. Upon taking the wolf, any person, whether resident or non-resident, shall notify within 30 days the appropriate person in the Division of Fish and Game Protection of the Department of Public Safety as designated by the Legislative Council. The notification shall specify, but not limited to, the date of taking, the location of taking, the sex of the animal. The Division of Fish and Game Protection shall comply a record of all notifications under the paragraph and submit it to the Legislative Council and the Department of Fish and Game at least every 6 months. And the saving clause in this piece of legislation is section B on line 24. The Legislative Council shall review and record submitted under A of this section and advise the legislature within 10 days of the beginning of each regular session or whether or not to repeal or retain this section. Most simple is the control in this piece of legislation that anyone who is a bona fide hunter, a bona fide resident license holder, could take a wolf. Now, in my experience in the last year, in my travels throughout my district, I could have taken, under this piece of legislation, I could have taken at least 15 wolves. Now, I'm going after this problem for not this, but some serious problems that I have in my district. I've got youngsters that walk to school, and I'm gonna specifically name a case. I've got three youngsters, less than 10 years old, walking 3.5 miles on the highway in an area where there are two wolf packs. These youngsters walk the 3.5 miles to Browns Court School. If at any time that pack happened to cross that highway, with those little kids on the road, wham, we're gonna lose the kids. Well, I have actually forced the Department of Education to put those youngsters in a school bus to get them off that highway, and it's that much danger. I have been asked by different people in my district, big game guides, to come with them and fly over the different areas to show them, that they would show me the different wolf packs throughout the area. In the Galena, I made a trip into Galena, I made a trip into the backcountry at Ruby, I have made two trips into the Tok country, I have made a trip into the Nabesna country, and I have flown extensively in the area from Nenana all the way to Tanana, doing just this. And you can take it from me that I don't think that any time in all the time that I've been in Alaska have I seen the multitude of wolves like we have them now. And again, Mr. Chairman, this is far and away the simplest method to bring about some kind of control that doesn't cost the taxpayers a damn dime.
Question. Representative Swanson, on the end of the line 12, was my particular problem with this bill. It says at any time. Would you be amenable to amending or a substitute bill during a prescribed season set by the Department of Fish and Game instead of the open at any time? I think you weaken your bill with that.
That's what Parent A says. Parent A says that.
Notwithstanding the authority of Board of Fish and Game, Section 255 of this chapter, nothing prohibits a person from taking wolf at any time in any game management unit or subunit by any means except the use of poison. And I've had a running battle for years over this thing of using poison to take to control predatory animals. And if Mr. Chairman, again, I'm agreeable. If we can make the the language stronger in here, I certainly would agree to it.
Mr. Chairman, I might say that finally starting the work. We have the Moose Bill and the Wolf Bill before us. But the problem I have read is on line 14. What if we delete a resident? Because it seems like it's inconsistent. If I was a non-resident and shot a wolf, I sure as hell wouldn't call the authorities because they'd probably write me up for not being illegal as far as this bill is concerned, because you have to hold a valid resident hunting license in section, in the part one. And part two, it says a non-resident, he shall notify. So it doesn't, you see what I mean? If we delete the resident part, it means you have a valid hunting license, period.
The point, I made the same point with the drafter of the bill. And the reason I went back to him and I said, well, I want to take this non-resident out of here. And he pointed out to me that a big game guide, while hunting, might have a non-resident hunter who could take a wolf. And that's the reason it's in there. I would be agreeable.
It seems to me, I don't know, the way I read it, of course, that only those holding a valid resident hunting license
is adequate.
It seems to me that if you take the resident out of a valid hunting license, period.
How would your amendment read?
It would read, and if I wouldn't do it, in effect, anybody had a valid hunting license in the state of Alaska could shoot a wolf.
Well, that's my intention when I went upstairs, but some of the things that the drafters and...
Maybe, do you have the drafter here?
No.
What would be your interpretation if I may ask to...
Sure, yeah, you're talking about just say valid hunting license as opposed to valid resident hunting license.
Right.
Yeah.
Does it appear inconsistent to you, one and two?
It just says resident one and it says resident non-resident. So it seems to me, you would have to make a reference, you just drop a reference to resident in the first paragraph.
If we dropped it.
Mm-hmm.
But the way it reads now, would it be inconsistent? That's,
yes, I see.
Well, I see. Well, that's about my head. That's the only comment I have. Sure.
Is there any more comments or questions?
There's another point, Fonzie. They could sue everybody. Those guys back there that's could sue everybody but me.
Is there any other questions?
No one but me, I should say. They can't sue me.
Would you elaborate on that?
Yes. Where they could sue the Department of Fish and Game for their program, and as you read, the latest article from Washington, D.C. is that there hits a snag in Washington that they're going to sue the Department of Fish and Game. Well, they can't sue me.
Isn't it?
What's he saying?
You're going on there
as sponsor?
That's right. Yeah.
I'd be happy to have you all on here as a sponsor, because I think it's an excellent piece of legislation and probably one of the few pieces of legislation where we'll have some major control that doesn't cost the taxpayers a lot of money. We don't have to have any big fancy programs. You don't have to wreck any helicopters. We don't have to have a multitude of government. We just simply do it this way.
As long as they can tell the difference between a wolf and a moose when they're out hunting during the
postseason.
That's
right.
Is there any other questions, Mr. Swanson?
Thank you.
Here, turn. Thank you. Bob Roche.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Bob Roche, the Director of Division of Game, Department of Fish and Game. I do have the state's official position on this bill, and I have, I believe, enough copies for everyone. I believe it's your desire to have this in writing, is that correct?
Right. Thank you.
I think I have them.
second page, please, is there something?
Just on the very top of it.
Oh.
You could draw pictures on the other hand.
Would you care to read this out loud for the benefit of the committee? I think everybody has a copy.
The program effects of the bill. This bill would eliminate effective management of wolves by removing all authority regulating their take from the Board of Game and the Department. Effective management would also be hampered by the transfer of management authority, compiling harvest reports to the Department of Public Safety. Fiscal impact, he says there were none. They have no proposed amendments. Their comments on the bill are, the enactment of this bill would make it impossible to ensure assured perpetuation of the wolf in Alaska, and would seem to be in violation of Article 8, Section 4 of the State Constitution, which requires that resources belonging to the state shall be utilized, developed, and maintained on the sustained yield principle, subject to preferences among beneficial uses. While it is true that the state has embarked on wolf control programs in selected proportions of the state, it is equally true that there are a number of places in the state where the wolf population level dictates closed seasons during portions of the year and a careful limitation of methods and means employed in taking them. One provision of this bill violates Federal Public Law 92-159 in that it would waive the prohibition on taking of wolves with the aid of aircraft except under a permit issued by the state. Proposed Section 1605-784A-2 which sets up a system for reporting wolves taken, should more appropriately direct persons taking wolves to report to the Department of Fish and Game. This bill, if enacted, would seriously detract from any cohesive systems management program. The authority for managing wolves is now vested with the Board of Game, and this bill would detract from their authority without substituting a program having any features of management superior to existing programs.
Is there any questions?
I have a question or two. How many people are in the Department of Fish and Game with a primary job managing fur-bearing animals?
Primary job of managing fur-bearing animals. Mr. Chairman, the area biologist system incorporates responsibility for managing all species within a particular area. We have a number of area biologist positions scattered throughout the state from Barrow all the way to Ketchikan. There are no specific assignments as to say one man is going to manage just fur. He may have the responsibility of fur, moose, caribou, and other species in a particular area. We don't have full-time people assigned to fur-bearing species.
The reason I'm saying this is that I may elaborate. I was called to a meeting just before coming to Juneau by the Trappers Association, who were irate to the fact that there was no one, in fact, in the entire interior, who had any expertise in managing the timber. No one who, in fact, could give a sustained yield. No one, in fact, who could reduce yield. My point is, sir, I don't think Department of Fish and Game is managing. Now, before Fish and Game got into this, which was about 4 or 5 years ago, I, who have lived, of course, 100 miles out of Fairbanks, had no problem with wolves. Since that time, an elderly German shepherd had been carried away from my place of business, and I see more and more and more wolf tracks. Likewise, when the people are out in the bush area, this is during the summer, recreation time, season is closed. And then we turn right around and we spend thousands and thousands of dollars of taxpayers' money to go out and have certain selected people shoot wolves. To me, this does not represent management.
Mr. Snyder.
I don't think, Mr. Roberts, that your authority has been compromised already by the availability of lawsuits and protests and so on.
The entire issue of wolf management in North America, of course, is very complex. The federal government has taken a position in two ways. One, with the passage of the Public Law 92-159, which requires that any wolves taken with the aid of aircraft must be done so for the purpose of protection or administration of wildlife values. There must be a permit issued by the state. It must state why you're doing it, and reports must be filed to the federal government. In addition, there is the Endangered and Threatened Species Act of 1973, and it's very probable that some of the populations of wolves in Alaska will be nominated shortly for protection, federal protection that is, under these provisions. The state does not have a free hand in managing wolves anymore. There are presently bills before United States Congress by Mr. Whitehurst of Virginia, which would remove all authority. We have had three lawsuits now. One is still pending. We've won two. One is still pending before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals on the Unit 13 research study. There are a tremendous number of people involved in our management efforts on wolves. We do have three control activities going in the state now. In the Northwest Arctic, which is totally public shooting from aircraft. There's no department involvement except monitoring it as required by federal law. We intend to remove up to 80% of the wolves from about 100,000 square miles, or possibly some 400 to 500 wolves, weather and conditions permitting. We have the situation in 20A where we are doing it by direction of the Board of Game. They requested that the department do the work there. It has not cost a great amount per wolf. Good share of the costs were recovered from the sale of the pelts. And the only other operation we have going right now of control is in southeast on Kuprinoff, Mitkoff, Edelin, and Wrangell Islands, where last year the legislature appropriated $50,000 to remove wolves from these islands, where a combination of severe winters and wolves severely lowered the deer population to the point that we've had the season closed totally for two seasons, and limited to bucks only for about two or three seasons prior to that time. We are doing work in those three areas. We're coming under a tremendous amount of criticism, both from within the state and from without of the state, for doing this control work. It is costing more money to administer the paperwork involved than actually in the field, I'm afraid. Well, that gives you some overview of what we're faced with, both nationally and locally. They tie our wolf management, the fact that we are killing some, to every conceivable issue from D2 to the location of the gas pipeline. And there is a tremendous amount of symbolism involved. Some of the protectionists have seized upon the wolf as the animal to crucify anybody that wishes to hunt and fish over. And I merely say that it's a fairly complex subject, and we recommend that we shouldn't go to a totally unlimited situation. We'd have many problems.
Sally.
Mr. Rush, there has been quite a problem in Fairbanks, but I will also include in my preface comments, I've traveled in the bush extensively for 2 years and I've only seen one wolf. I realize they're carrying off dogs. Fortunately, they haven't gotten to children yet, but I have personally only had one confrontation. Do you see an alternative to this legislation? Do you view this legislation as feasible for what it's trying to accomplish, other than the comments that are in the governor's statement?
Mr. Chairman? It has been my view for the last year and a half or so, since I've been where I am, that there are a number of areas in the state that we should do wolf control. I prefer to do it as we are in the Northwest Arctic, with aircraft, and let the public get involved. It's cheaper. We still have to monitor it. We have to put people up there to monitor their activities so they aren't taking wolves from where we don't want them. I think we've moved about as rapidly as we can in establishing control areas without jeopardizing our continued authority to manage this species. It's very probable in the next few years that we'll see a leg hold trap bill go through Congress. This will limit our options in controlling wolves. It's possible, though I think less likely, that the Congress might take the authority away from the states entirely to manage the wolf. I think, you know, I can only guess at that. I think also that the authority that Alaska has to manage on federal lands may be diluted some. So we're faced with a number of pressures pushing us into what you might call non-management, or certainly very limited management of the species. At the same time, the Board of Game has been pushing to recognize the critical areas, such as southeastern Alaska, northwest Arctic, and 20A around Fairbanks, to do some control. We've done some control, or in effect control, in a research project in Unit 13, but that's primarily to evaluate the impact of wolves upon moose. I question that we can move much more rapidly in the direction of control without triggering a reaction from the antis, or from those who are opposed to any use of the resource, to the extent that we couldn't handle it. There's a very determined effort to stop it.
One other thing, is there any plans afoot to do anything in 20C, where I've received a letter from a constituent who wolves are going right down through the village of Central. I've seen there in the evening quite often.
Mr. Chairman, the Board of Game will meet in June starting March 29th. I have several proposals before us for additional wolf control. Sidney Huntington, who lives on down the Yukon, is much concerned about some of the areas too. And it may well be that the board will decide that they want the directors to do control in more of these areas. I'm in favor of it, providing we can do it without so alienating the rest of the country and a good share of the Alaskans that we lose total control, which is pretty much what's happened. We didn't have some of these problems until the public law 92-159 went through, and in 1972 there was a cessation of aerial permits. And a good share of our problems may well have stemmed from that cessation. And getting back into it now is extremely difficult. And we had some 5,000 to 10,000 letters we had to answer last year. And they're building up a similar campaign again this year.
As I would perceive this bill, it merely extends the hunting season of the wolf.
Mr. Chairman, unless I misunderstand it, it says nothing prohibits a person from taking a wolf at any time in any game management unit. And I would take that to mean a continuous open season with any method or mean except poison, aircraft shooting, etc., which would be actually, in my opinion, detrimental in some of the areas, such as the Arctic slope, where wolf populations are quite low now. I think we'd immediately pass into a threatened and endangered species nomination by some of the protectionists. They would get it, and we would be out of our hands. The state could no longer manage.
Does it also refer to the Fish and Game can, in fact, close areas?
Mr. Chairman, not as I understand the legislation.
Mr. Rush, could you tell us how many wolves, this has been going on for a couple of years since I've been in here, how many have you taken since the last session?
The total harvest, as I recall it, Mr. Chairman, in 1976 was something over 1,000 wolves. We took, the department took 66 out of 20A, and trappers and other hunters took another 70. We took about 136, as I recall, out of 20A. In Game Management Unit 13, where we were doing a research study, we took between 30 and 40 off in this one study area. But statewide, it was well over 1,000 that were harvested, and this has been going on. I think the highest harvest we had were a few years back, about 1,800. It's ranging from 1,000 to 1,800.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did we ask the department to supply us with documentary information or statistical data indicating the wolf take over the past 12 months in Alaska, or before 1976? Well, that would be a... like that written down.
Specifically, how much it costs per wolf for the state to kill? How about that? What's the cost for every wolf that it kills, that the state killed, in other words?
There are no more questions of Mr. Rosen.
Yeah, about $20 a pound.
Yeah, Mr. Rosen. I've been doing some reading on this over the years, actually, and I'm kind of curious where the department stands in relation to some research I've read, in which it's believed that take a given pack, there's one so-called alpha wolf and a beta wolf, both males, and then sort of a prime female, and that somehow the interaction within the pack is such that it's a very controlled mating situation, and that only the alpha wolf actually mates, and that the job of the beta wolf is apparently to keep everybody else in line. I don't know how he does it. It's a heck of a job, but that's supposedly the role that this thing is. And the upshot of the reading that I've done on this, and this is supposedly from observation in many areas, including Mount McKinley, the upshot is that as long as you have a fairly large pack, and where they're organized this way, there's actually a minimum number of new wolves produced each year. Whereas if by the wrong hunting means we break the packs up into smaller units, you have that many more smaller units with more alphas and betas, and therefore a lot more little wolves being whelped in the whelping season. Number one, I'm kind of curious if that type of study has credence in the department. I have no idea whether that's right or wrong. And number two, does that influence your decisions and how you go about controlling the wolves to the extent that you're able to do it?
Mr. Chairman, the subject of wolf reproduction has been under close scrutiny for the last 10 to 15 years. And what Representative Miller reports is certainly true for some of the zoological gardens and some of the studies that one was started on Isle Royal and some observations made in Mount McKinley. But in practice, where we've handled literally thousands of wolf carcasses and some of the work that's going on in Alaska right now in the Kenai Moose Range and also in Unit 13, it does seem that the alpha male doesn't do as good a job of supervising his buddies as he should. And very often, what we actually find is that all the sexually mature females are pregnant each year, providing there's an adequate food base. We have one pack of 20 with radios on it on 15A right north of Kenai now, and there's about 40 some wolves in that area right now that are under study. And as long as there's a lot of food, they seem to continue to reproduce. And so I guess what I'm saying is some of the published material needs to be qualified a little more. We do take that sort of thing into consideration when we propose a control effort. And we say that we have to take at least 80% of the wolves in an area in order to be effective because of their capacity to reproduce. 80% is not a magic figure, but around that area.
Thank you. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. Is there any other questions? Mr. Rouse.
I'd like to, Mr. Bennett, Chairman, go on record. I'm not for exterminating wolves. That's what I'm saying. My feelings are predicated on actual experiences and living out away from paradise. And people, in fact, are having problems. I think it would be a great misdemeanor to try to exterminate the wolves, even in my area, which is out of the way. But I don't want to see people, or property, or pets molested by wild animals. I think the state has a responsibility for protecting them, be it from criminals, be it from wild animals. And any time when they seem to be out of balance, I think there has to be action taken. That's my view.
If there's no more question to Mr. Rouse, what's the wishes of the committee on? Is there someone else testify?
My name is Mark Jensen, and I've hunted in Unit 13 and Unit 20 for about the last 20 years, every year. I'd like to compliment Mr. Swanson on his personal effort in bringing this subject up. It's a complicated subject. I appreciate very much what the director of game, Mr. Rausch, has just stated here. And my concern is that no matter how much the department would want to move faster on this wolf control programs, I believe that their hands are tied and that there is a real threat of federal takeover. That's what I, from all I have followed. And because of that, and because of the need for, I think, a little faster predator control in some areas, and in 28, I was hunting in that area when that was probably, in my opinion, the best hunting area in the world as far as the different species went. And I went through the whole cycle of first starting to see a few wolves in the canyons, and we'd talk about it, and then gradually you'd see fewer calves, and then the big the herd started to go down. But what happened was that since 1972, when the wolf was changed into a game animal from predator animal, the control programs that used to be in force were abandoned for a few years, and we had a big surge of wolves. So you had kind of a buildup of a backlog of wolves that we're trying to handle at this particular point, which is the real problem. But now I understand that with the effort they have made in 28, the calf ratio has started to jump right back. But when you pull a big herd way down, it takes a long time to bring that herd back. And I think that under good game management, we should have enough management close enough to the balance to where we don't let the herds drop to a low level. But I would like to throw this out. I think that the time has come where a resource committee like this and the State of Alaska Administration Department have to look seriously on how much increased federal control we're going to allow on our game. Because I think that unless we speak up and unless we have some program of selling our problems to the people back there that are doing this all to us, taking away our control, we're going to continually lose more and more control over our game. And just what approach should be made? But I know this, that unless we fight back with good solid facts on some level, we're going to continue to lose more, not gain. And whether it's a matter of a cross-section of committees, some representing the professional guides, some representing the hunters, and some representing a resource committee, some from the governor's staff, talk to those people back there that should be talked to let them know how concerned we are with being bound in by regulations where we really can't do a job. And we've gone through the cycle of having being challenged in court, now it's a pretty near, you have to establish, I think the department has to establish that there is a ratio in any unit that they go in for control of wolves, and that they're only going to take so many and stuff like that. It's hard, I think, for people that don't travel in the bush all the time to appreciate how big the country is and how much coverage there is for animals. To even take a helicopter or an aeroplane, you're still only going to see part of them if you just cover a big country intensely. So there's, in my opinion, the wolf is awful smart, and he's going to do a good job of protecting himself. Once you shoot him a little bit from an aeroplane, they'll hear an aeroplane sound 20 miles away if they can hear that far, and they're in the bush right now. He's that smart. But I would like to see some thought given to some type of cross-section of a committee to go back or make contact with the people in Congress or the people in Interior Department or whoever it is. I can't just tell you now who the talking should be to try and cool this thing down. And that's where I think we could help all of us. That's all I have to say.
Are there any questions for Mr. Jensen? Hear you.
Mark, you hunted in Unit 20 last year?
No, I hunted in Unit 13.
Unit 13, is there a heavy wolf population 13?
Well, they took about, let's see, it took, I think it was 60 or close to 100 in there. The thing that it has been hurt where I hunted it had been hurt very badly as far as caribou and moose too. We just didn't see calves, and the feed over the last few years is just lush. Nobody, you know, we just feed all over, caribou feed and everything.
Did you see any wolves while you're in?
No, I didn't. We saw...
Were they there?
Well, like I say, we saw droppings from the standpoint that we knew there was some work in that country. But the Unit 13 where I was hunting is kind of bad all the time anyway, because you're right alongside the park, and the park does nothing to control wolves. And they just kind of keep feeding out and feeding out. If they run short of a little game, they're over the boundary.
Well, over the years, you've found areas where there are lots of wolves.
20A is where I, from the 50s, you know.
When you were hunting there during that period, did you see lots of wolves in your
home? Over those years, when the wolves started to increase, we took only three wolves with hunters, the hunters that I had. And usually it was a matter of coming down from high country, from sheep country, and there wasn't any brush, and we would run into them.
The point I was trying to make, that even if you had open season on wolves, when you're in a wolf country, damn seldom
seen
what you take a shot at any
time. Well, I mean, it's rare. I mean, you can have wolves all around you, but...
You never seen them.
No, like I say, all those years, and we only shot three wolves. All those years, we only shot... Yeah, we'd see the big... Well, there'd be four or five running in a canyon, fresh tracks. I mean, you know, you just... But they're smart. They're a night animal, and they're an animal that goes in coverage very much, like a smart dog, something like that. So they're not so easy to get, no matter how you set out to get them. But the guides, like you, I mean, they want a balance. They don't want to exterminate anything. They appreciate all wildlife. But when your calf ratio goes down to where you're not maintaining some herd, why, everybody's concerned. Just that simple. But I think some thought should be given to what can be done to help the Department of Game, not lose more control, and maybe improve the situation. Maybe improve the situation. But I think unless something is done, you're going to lose more.
Miller? Yeah, I just want to kind of get in my mind. You mentioned you didn't think we needed to heat up the situation right now. Is it your feeling that the passage of this bill would amount to heating up the situation and cause
yes,
what you're afraid of?
You know, I know that what Mr. Roush has said is true, and that is that as much as I would like to endorse the bill and the concept that we should just take over and say, you know, don't talk to us on the federal level, they won't admit it. I mean, they won't allow it, and we'd be in trouble. That's what I'm afraid of, and we'd be in trouble. But I think because of your effort, I think that maybe some good can come out of this. If thought is given, what are other steps that can be done to improve the situation? And that's what I would like to say.
Is there anyone else? Any questions? Is there anyone else to testify? Hearing none, what's the wishes of the committee on House Bill number 18?
Mr. Chairman, before we take any action on the bill, I'd like to propose that amendment, leave resident line 14, at least to make the bill consistent.
Amendment? What's the amendment?
Delete resident line 14.
Do you hear the motion to delete resident?
I guess I'm missing something. What?
Line 14.
It's inconsistent in the next ice. Two lines, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I just put it in second row.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, so order.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Snyder.
I would like to amend line 12, deleting the words at any time.
You hear the, anybody anything on deleting that, Mr. Malone?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what that deletion does.
you read it in context. Nothing prevents a person taking a wolf in any game management unit, except the use, by any means, except the use of a poison. What is that, either deleting or not deleting at any time, what difference does that make?
I think it helps throw it back into the management of by fishing game. I think the words at any time really weaken the entire intent of the bill.
In other words, it relates back to 255 and
would be in a season.
Chairman? Yeah. Assuming for a moment that that does that, I think share the speaker's skepticism that it does it. But I think the whole purpose of the bill is to take it out of the hands of fish and game, you know, and that worries me. But I mean, aside from the fact that it worries me for a moment, the whole purpose of the bill is to take it out of the hands of fish and game. So I don't think you want to, if we're going to pass the bill, I don't think you want to, you know, put it back in. I think the whole idea is to say, hey, no longer, this is no longer going to be a matter of fish and game has any jurisdiction. They're just available to be shot whenever they're seen. As I say, that bothers me, but I think, you know, this is kind of a case of whether you either vote yes or you vote no.
Mr. Snyder, would you wish to withdraw your amendment?
I'd like to hear I've been remiss in reading Section 255. You're looking it up.
Hello. Mr. Chairman? I don't know. I don't think it makes a whole lot of difference. It really comes down to it. Because what you would be doing in 1605-784A is eliminating the authority of the board to make regulations it considers advisable. So, I mean, notwithstanding that section. So we really, after that, it really wouldn't matter except whatever restrictions you put into the new law. In other words, I don't think at any time will make any difference unless you're going to set specific seasons in the law. You could say daytime, nighttime, or something, but you know, it wouldn't make any difference.
The seasons are kind of what I'm getting at, I guess.
Do you wish to keep your amendment in, Snyder?
Yes.
What's the wishes of the committee on Snyder's amendment? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. And what's the wishes of the committee on House Bill number 18? Snyder?
I move and recommend do pass.
Come along.
Yeah, I have an objection for the purpose of the amendment. Maybe I could, Mr. Chairman, direct a question to the sponsor.
Right.
Okay. Read on line 18 of the bill, you got is designated by the Legislative Council. Why? Why not say the commissioner in there or something like that?
Well, it refers there to the Department of Public Safety as the people who are actually the people who handle the control of fish and game, the protection division. According to the person in the division, in the division of fish and wildlife protection of the Department of Public Safety, as designated by the Legislative Council, which means that the Legislative Council can ask the commissioner of the Department of Public Safety to notify them, or at least a chain of command there, where the information will come back. The objective here is to put that information in the hands of the Legislative Council as well as the Public Protection Division, so that the legislature has access to true figures.
Come on.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I thought that's what it's supposed to do, but I think it's covered down in lines
21, 22, 23 of the bill. And what I'm asking is, why would the Legislative Council, or why would we want the Legislative Council to designate an appropriate person? I would think that would be somebody, something be up to the commissioner to do that.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
what I'm saying is further on down, reports under the law are required to the Legislative Council. And then they have a direction in the law to review the reports and advise the legislature. But why would they want to be monkeying around with designating a person who is going to receive these reports in the Division of Fish and Wildlife Protection?
May I respond to that?
Yeah.
I think that the appropriation purchase, the Working Fish and Wildlife Protection Department of Public Safety shall notify, but not limited to. Now, that's not quite the right word, but you can take it out of there if you like.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what I was going to say is on line 18, if we just took out Legislative Council and say Commissioner,
all right,
then, you know, it'd be something that you'd carry out by administrative action. The reports would still come in according to the law.
That's okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that delete the words Legislative Council, line 18, substitute the word Commissioner.
You heard the question?
Anybody opposed? Hearing none, so ordered. Is there you wish to make it a committee substitute? What's the wishes of the committee? A committee substitute or just amend it as she stands?
Just
amend it. We had a motion on the floor. Pass the bill out. Would it do pass? Do we have any objection?
Object.
Yes.
I object.
What's the wishes to pass it out on individual recommendations?
Do not pass.
Mr. Chairman? I think a motion in order to pass out with individual recommendations would be proper, but before we vote on that, I'd like to say that I certainly understand the frustrations of Representative Swanson and the problems that exist, but I honestly think that we're just going to create more problems by passing, by opening it wide open, that we're going to solve. I think we're going to have one of those periods again. We're going to have people writing the governor and have lawsuits and everything else, and I think a net result will be a setback instead of improving the program. I think I don't consider the fish and game people adversaries in this particular problem. I think that they're doing what they can do. I think they're moving as fast as they can possibly move. Because they're really walking on eggs, and I think all we're going to do is build a fire, and I think we're going to be the losers.
Anyone else? What's the wishes of the committee?
I'd like to make one statement before we do vote in favor of this bill. I think there have been many, many Alaskans who have grave concern that they're not being represented and that their desires are not being exercised, either by the Department of Fish and Game, who's had numerous years to rectify this situation. I have to fully concur with Red Swanson that there is a need for someone to intervene. And as was pointed out, we cannot be sued for passing a bill. The Department of Fish and Game can be for regulations. And I think that's a very valid point. I think at some stage in life, and we're going to have to, whether it's politically sound or not sound, realize that number one, there is a problem. Number two, we need an immediate type solution. And number three, have the courage of conviction to vote on this.
No.
I think the assumption is completely unfounded to think somebody can't bring a suit just because we pass a bill. The history of Alaska and every other state in the Union is we replete with people who have passed bills and people have sued on, you know, on the basis of their constitutional rights and everything else. They can't sue us as individuals, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, they wouldn't anyway. But you know, I'm sure that if people want to bring suit, they're going to find some reason under which to bring, you know, environmental suit of some kind. And just the fact that we passed a bill is no protection from a suit at all.
Mr. Malone.
No, I was just going to ask, Mr. Chairman, do we have a motion pending?
Yeah, Mr. Snyder.
Mr. Chairman, I would draw my motion if I may. We did, at one point I did overlook, we asked Mr. Rouse to bring additional information to us, and possibly that we should hold this until we receive that information.
Sally?
Just in closing argument of my own, I would like to point out to the committee that my personal feelings are that a bill is not the answer to every problem, and that sometimes we need to find other avenues other than creating legislation, because it often creates more problems than we had to begin with.
We will, as soon as you've got a bill up, Rick.
Next time you call her, next time you call her, Mr. Smith.
Is there a motion to send a bill out with individual recommendations, or what's the wishes of the committee? Mr. Malone?
Sure, Mr. Chairman, I'll make that motion.
You hear the motion? Hearing no objection, so
I thought you were going to call for a vote on this.
Call for a vote on passing it out with the individual recommendations. Everybody in favor of passing the bill out? Signify by